This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Emma Barnett and welcome to Eye of the Storm. In this regular podcast, I talk to someone who's found themselves at the heart of a big news event. I try to discover what really happened at the time, how they coped, crucially though, how they have moved on. In this episode, we're going back to 2004 and an entertainment story that gripped millions, me included. I'm sure you'll remember it because it was the first ever series of X Factor, and the winner was Steve Brookstein. In January 2005, his debut single, a cover of Phil Collins' Against All Odds, topped the charts. I'll take a look at me now. There's just an empty space. And you're coming back to me is against the odds. And that's what I gotta face. In May 2005, Steve's debut album, Heart and Soul, went straight to number one. But just 12 weeks later, Steve faced the ultimate bombshell. He was dropped by Simon Cowell and his record label. Steve Brookstein joined me and very generously started telling me about his career before X Factor.
Well, I started singing when I was about 20, 21. A friend of mine, funny enough, the guy that produced that record was a guy called Steve Mack. He sold billions of records now. He's one of Simon Cowell's main producers. He had a band, and the lead singer of the band was a guy called Ryan Lee. And he got me into... I met him at a karaoke bar. And he said, you've got a good voice, take up singing lessons. So I went to his singing coach and I started singing. And we started a kind of duo and we had a Radio 1 record of the week with Judge Jules, and everything was going great. But then, you know, I think the record label was MCA and they got taken over by a bigger label and we got dropped and nothing happened. And you kind of think, well, where am I going to go? I was getting on a bit. And I ended up doing some writing and working with that artists and working for them. And things just never seemed to work out. I mean, we did some massive record deals and then they'd go wrong. And it was ups and downs. And that's how it's been. It's always been like that. I don't think I've seen it any other way.
How did you end up auditioning for X Factor then?
I was back singing. I was just going out. Saturday nights I was gigging. You know, that's how it was. And my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, she said, there's a new talent show going on TV. And it's not like Pop Idol, where they want up to 25-year-olds. They want people that are over 25. And at the time, I was 35. So I thought, OK, I'll go there. And it wasn't really... I didn't go into it to win it. You never do. You just go in there to kind of just show off a little bit and say, look, this is what I do.
Yeah.
And hopefully you can meet some other contacts so you can write or produce or whatever it is you do. And... I just went along and it just carried on. Every week we had a little joke. I'd come back and I'd say I got through to the next round and I just, she didn't know whether I'd got through or not until I got home and I'd do a little X.
I'm there. I'm still there.
Yeah, I'm still there. And that just carried on and it was a great journey. I've got to say I did enjoy it.
Yes.
Oh, even with the bad things that went with it.
Well, we'll get to those in a minute. Did you have any idea as you kept staying in it that you might actually win this thing?
Yeah, I think when we got to the live shows and I kind of saw who... I felt bad because there's a couple of people. There's a guy called John Cabey who was in boot camp with me and he's a black guy and he sounded like Will Downing and I'm a big fan of Will Downing. And we were sharing a room together and I thought, this guy's phenomenal. And he didn't get through. And certain things started to bug me. It's like, how the hell did that person not get through? But that person got through. And then I got further. And I'm a good singer. Okay, I'm good. But you kind of think, you know, I'm 35. I'm pushing it a bit now. Should I really be winning a talent show like this?
But you did. I mean,
I did. Yeah,
I'm thankful.
I'm thankful. You know, and there's a market for old guys.
Yeah, but what did it feel like to win the X Factor, especially the first one?
Do you know the funny thing was, and I'll never forget it. But the ticker tape's coming down, and the audience. There's like 500. There's 500 people in the audience, and yeah, right. It's the first one, and it's like millions of people watching it at home, and I had these. ups and downs with my career, like with the band that never quite happened, and I had a couple of artists that I signed to major record labels and they never quite happened. And I'm standing there, I'm thinking, nothing can go wrong now. And it's like, yeah, right. Because never tell God your plans. They say that, don't they? Never tell God your plans because he'll just, you know. And it was, and that's the thing that makes me, I can laugh at it in a way. It is a pain, but you can look back and think, wow, you went all that way and you thought you were going to make it, and then suddenly it's taken away.
And why was it taken away? What happened with Simon?
Do you know what? For me, I don't blame Simon. I do, but I don't, because he didn't know me. And unfortunately, circumstances didn't really work out. Things happened at the wrong time that if I was a different person, it may have been okay. And I think that I had life experiences that probably weren't suited for me to get that type of success, really.
So in the way, to be more specific, though, were you asked to make music you didn't want to make?
That was part of it. I would say that was definitely part of it, because there's certain songs on that album that I love, but there's certain songs on it that I cannot listen to. I've not listened to once, you know.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I did a version of Hang On In There Baby by Johnny Bristol, and it's one of my favourite songs. And we did a cover of a cover. It was like Curiosity Killed the Cat. It was really, I mean, my influences are all proper soul artists. So anything that gets kind of watered down kind of really irks me. And, you know, we did a song with B.B. Winans, who did a Wanna Be the Only One with Eternal, and he's won loads of Grammys. And funnily enough, he was a contact via my time with EMI Publishing in New York back in 2000. So I rang up my publisher and he got me to work with B.B. Winans. And he came over with some great ideas to record, and it could have been great. But the music was watered down. It was a pretty poor cover. It's okay. I mean, his voice on it is amazing. I did a good job. But in terms of what it could have been so much better. And that kind of thing. But it wasn't.
Why did you actually fall out with Simon Cowell? Most people won't know the answer to that question.
Well, the real reason is a bit dark and not really afternoon radio. I don't think so. It's just, how do you put it? There's things that just happened in my life that I had to speak about. And I wasn't willing to speak about it with Max Clifford. And I knew who Max Clifford was. I knew what he was about. And rather than speak to Max Clifford, I decided to go to the press. And unfortunately, the story was buried. And because that's what Max Clifford does. If he doesn't like a story that you come out with, they bury it. And that kind
Max
of thing.
Clifford, of course, just to remind people, the very much disgraced PR supremo who died in jail not that long ago.
Mm.
But the point that you're making is you sort of went against the machine that was meant to be around somebody like you.
Yeah, I should have. And people say, if there's one thing, you should play the game. You should play the game.
Do you regret not playing the game?
Yeah, I guess so. Now that I've got a wife and kids and you want the best for them, you think, I should have played the game. But at the time, when you've got a certain view of life and what it should be, and you're quite idealistic, you kind of think, I should do what I think is the right thing to do. And in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't important. You know, we've got bigger issues in the world than certain things you want to come out with and say, you know. So
how did you rebuild after that? What was the next step for you? Could you go back to gigging?
Actually, that was the difficult bit. I found it really hard to do that because I'm constantly in a world of a dilemma where people respect me as a vocalist. Some people still think I'm fantastic, and some people can't stand me. So you'll have these moments where people think your value is very low, and you get some people think your value is very, very high. So you'll get one minute you'll do a gig in Monaco on a yacht at the Grand Prix, and next minute people are saying, come and do our pub gig for 250 quid. So it's like, whoa, okay. So you've always questioning how good you are and what your worth
was
is.
Was it a benefit to have been on the X Factor to go back without that contract into the real world?
Is it a benefit? I don't know. I've learned a lot of things. I don't try and live with regret. You know, it's like the film Sliding Doors. You don't know where your life would have been if you hadn't have done it. Mm. So I don't know what would have... I mean, before X Factor, I had supported Dionne Warwick in concert.
Wow.
And I was I was offered to support Lionel Richie. And ironically, it was on the same night as I won the X Factor. I was meant to be supporting Lionel Richie. I was at Fountain Studio in Wembley, and right opposite, Lionel Richie was in Wembley doing his, on the same night, on the 11th of December 2004. And I'm thinking, well, what if I'd gone and supported Lionel Richie that night instead of going on the X Factor? What would life have turned out? But now I'm married and I've got two wonderful kids, so you just never know.
Because, I mean, it's interesting. We've just got a message from Mark, hello, who's listening in West Midlands, who says, X Factor, history's proven that it's often better for an actor or an artist not to win, as then they're able to realise, or release, I should say, much better music. What do you make of that?
It depends what they've got planned for you. I do think that. I think at the time, what people forget is that G4, oh, I love G4, they were really nice guys, but, you know, they released their album for Mother's Day, which was, I was at the time, obviously not now.
Were G4 the other act?
They got to the final.
I remember who they were, I just couldn't remember where they were in this.
Yeah. And they released their album for Mother's Day, which I think was the best time of the year, to, especially X Factor, and being the housewife's favourite. And I was surprised that they got, because on the contract it says, oh, the winner only gets a contract. That's what they were saying. It's £1 million record deal and the winner gets a contract. And I'm thinking, hold on, but the runner-up have released their album for me. And I could never work that out. But you just, you know, afterwards you just realise that they have their plan. And it's, they decide what they want to do before the show's even finished.
Do you get £1 million?
No.
Why did you just ruin the bubble?
No, you don't get that. No, you maybe get to look at it. You get to see Simon's house.
Right. Simon's house, nice.
It's all right.
You've not been around.
No.
Have you ever spoken since? Have you ever crossed paths?
No. We. I think the last time we spoke. I was signed to the label. I think it was about discussing terms of leaving the label. I think I emailed him and said, I don't want to fall out with you. And then the next minute I saw him on TV saying something, oh, G4, the real world. I thought, oh, okay, well, I guess that we've fallen out then.
That was it. And you'd be open to a reconciliation, do you think?
Do you know what? It would have been nice. I do regret, because I think we would have got on. I think it's more of a misunderstanding. And I did resent him for a long time because I thought he treated me disgracefully. But you just think he's got a business to run. And he's a better businessman than I will ever be. So he's got to work, you know, do what is right for him.
You seem remarkably sort of sanguine and not bitter about this experience that you've been through. But has it taken you a while to feel like
that? Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, it's certainly years. I mean, in a way, it does. It's never not going to hurt. If you cared about something, you love something. I mean, the thing I noticed the difference was, for a long time, I couldn't sing without a knot in my stomach and hate, you know, getting up and getting, and even thinking about it takes you back to those hard times. Whereas now, if I go and sing a song and I've got an audience, I enjoy the song. I love what I'm doing again, which is nice. And so, you know, I'll get back out there and start recording and hopefully make some decent music this time.
Yeah, so tell us, what are you doing now? Because we've got another message here saying, we met Stephen a couple of years ago in a restaurant. What a lovely guy. You've obviously got your fans still. And even if it wasn't the most positive experience in the end, it did propel you to national
fame. That's it. I'm going out to Spain next week, and I doubt I would have had those contacts if the people that hadn't known that I'd been on X Factor. So, yeah, there's some good things that have come from it. And I've got, although saying that, I'm going to be recording a new album, but it's a contact I had before X Factor. He's an American guy called Alan Glass, and his brother Preston, and they've got contacts with George Benson and Michael McDonald and some old school soul people that I really respect. So hopefully we'll make some decent music.
So that's the music that you're...
Yeah, that's my influences. I did an album recently which was called Forgotten Man, which I titled it not because of me. It was all to do with a guy, David Ruffin, which was the lead singer of the Temptations. He did a song called Forgotten Man, and I've always wanted to record it, but it's really a kind of paying homage to these great soul singers like David Ruffin, Felipe Wynn, and Freddie Scott, and just some wonderful singers. And you know the songs, but you don't necessarily know the name of the artist. So we did a great... I love the album. I've done some... I'm happy with the work I'm making, you know, the music I'm making.
And is that your full-time gig now?
Yeah, I know. I don't have to be an estate agent anymore.
Were you an estate agent?
I wasn't an estate agent.
After the X Factor?
No, before.
Before, okay. Before. So you've never worked as anything
I've never ever worked.
No. That's not what I'm saying. I had an estate agent in here earlier. I don't want him to come back in and have a go at me.
No.
But you've never worked as anything else since...
I'd love to be a plumber. I'm just laughing
at the way you've gone from talking about soul music to saying I'd love to be a plumber.
Well, do you know what? Do you know who went to be a plumber? A guy called Lewis Taylor, one of the greatest singers, one of the greatest soul singers in this country's ever had. He's like the Marvin Gaye of the UK, and I think he went back to doing plumbing, and he's an amazing singer. It's a great loss. Great loss.
Apart from the plumbing, then, just in terms of how day-to-day life is now, when people do recognise you, like...
No, they won't. Look at this old fat face.
No. I recognise you immediately. When they do recognise you, do they come up to you? Do they say anything? What's it like?
Yeah, you know, generally, I mean, obviously, you've got your Twitter trolls and you've got your Facebook friends. So it's two different types of people. Generally speaking, people are generally nice. They are. I think generally people, even the Twitter trolls, are nice. If you get them individually, they're nice. As groups, we can sometimes be jerks, but...
But they're all right.
People are generally nice, yeah.
So on balance, X Factor was an okay experience.
On balance, yeah. I mean, you do it too. But I'm quite good at dealing with things.
That was Steve Brookstein, first winner of the X Factor, opening up about that feud with Simon Cowell and life after being dropped by one of the moguls of the music industry. It took him a little while to get to the point to talk about their... how much it affected him in terms of feeling bitter, feeling sad, and for a while he wasn't even able to sing. I mean, can you imagine going through that? But he's back to making the music, and what a lovely chap he wants to talk to. Do let me know what you think. Get in touch with me directly at BBC 5 Live or at Emma Barnett, all on social media, of course. It's from 5 Live, from my show, which we do Monday to Thursday, 10 a.m. till 1 p.m. And don't forget, we have a new Eye of the Storm interview every week. To get the latest one as it arrives, please do subscribe using your favourite podcast app, completely free, of course. You can also download and listen to our previous editions, including the story of the TV presenter, Simon Thomas, whose wife died just 3 days after being given a blood cancer diagnosis, and also the life and times of the disgraced politician Jonathan Aitken. Why don't you leave us a rating and a review too? It'll only take 2 seconds. We'd be very, very grateful. And of course, it is always great to hear what you really think.